For those concerned with such things, I've titled my discussion this afternoon, Reason, Neutrality, and the Free Market. The debate between traditionalists and libertarians in the American right has been going on for a good length of time, certainly in the open for the last 10 years. This division, which is implicit really in the very foundations of both the ISI and YAF, broke into the open last summer institutionally with the foundation of the Libertarian Alliance. Like so much of the current intellectual strife in America, the Vietnam War issue served as a kind of catalyst for the division. Pacifist libertarians who were opposed to conscription could no longer tolerate the implications of what they really regard as a kind of new American imperialism, while Cold War conservatives who long ago abandoned the earlier isolationist heritage of American conservatism have not been able, or at least been willing, to sacrifice the struggle against international communism merely for the sake of lower national budgets and libertarian ideology. An anti-communism that is based on the concept of military superiority obviously is not in a very good position to seek the older goal of a limited state. Can be done, perhaps, but it's far more difficult. The technology of warfare demands too much money and too much centralized planning to make this an easy task. However, the war is not the focus of my discussion this afternoon. I'm far more concerned with what I regard as more fundamental issues, especially intellectual issues, that I believe serve as points of division between traditional conservatives and contemporary libertarian anarcho-capitalists, if you prefer, or just extreme libertarians. As I see it, the essential questions are these. First, what are the limits of toleration, both personal and social? And then perhaps more fundamental, what role does autonomous human reason play in the discovering of these limits of toleration? In the pure type, to use Max Weber's terminology, of each position, we discover irreconcilable opposition. The libertarian denies that society can legitimately use force to impose limits on the actions of others which do not interfere with the voluntary activities of fellow citizens. The conservative denies the existence of anything resembling an all-encompassing neutral human reason. To one extent or another, the conservative argues, any hypothesis that is based on the idea of autonomous individual human reason is a fallacious hypothesis. And that, I think, characterizes the debate that has gone on, at least for the past 10 years, on the American right. The traditional conservative tends to value human freedom because he has very little faith in human nature. Now, this may seem incongruous, but I think it can be explained. Because human nature is corrupt, the traditionalist resists the concentration of power in any single institution or individual. No single institution should be regarded as sovereign outside of its own legitimate but strictly limited sphere. Society, in this perspective, is a matrix of competing sovereignties, each with certain claims on men, but none with total claims in all areas of life. Almost without exception, traditional apologetics rests on the institution of the family as being primary to society and to social organization. Any law or institutional arrangement which threatens the integrity of the family faces very serious opposition from conservatives. Guilt, in a sense, is presumed until innocence is proved without a shadow of a doubt for any such proposal. Other institutions, such as churches, local governments, voluntary private schools, voluntary societies of all types, act, in the conservative view, as buffers against centralized political power. Atomize men, both Robert Nisbet and Hannah Arendt would argue, and you create the framework necessary for the exercise of totalitarian power. If you reduce men to individuals who are not protected by institutions that possess limited but legitimate sovereignty, and you will find the state will centralize unmercifully and concentrate power with a vengeance. Man does not live by autonomy alone, in other words. The individual is therefore not the starting point of social analysis in most conservative frameworks. The family is. The conservative is therefore a defender of a pluralistic community with each institution able to enforce a limited sovereignty over the members of the community. The alternative to this is either anarchy and then, as a result, tyranny. As A.A. Burley puts it in his recent study of power, quote, power invariably fills any vacuum in human organization. As between chaos and power, the latter always prevails. How is it possible, then, that libertarians have been able to cooperate at all with traditional conservatives over the past decade? In this very second issue of the New Individualist Review, summer of 61, one libertarian, Edward C. Facey, offered this explanation, and I quote, still, individualists merge with the conservatives in urging a strict adherence to the Constitution of the United States. This is a tactical maneuver. It is the strategy of individualists to work a Fabianism in reverse until one by one, the parts of the political structure, beginning with the most absurd, are upended and continuing until nothing is left. The Constitution, strictly interpreted, aids in this process. That was the perspective of a libertarian a decade ago. Since that time, a noticeable shift in tactics has taken place. The Vietnam War issue has convinced many libertarians of the new right that they are more closely aligned in principle with the anarchist wing of the new left. As one libertarian speaker put it at a conference sponsored by a local YAF chapter in Southern California last April, freedom today is threatened more by conservative Republicans than by the anarchists in America. If this is not the prevailing view of a majority of libertarians, I think it is the direction in which many of them are moving at the present time. Now, the pure anarchist has very little difficulty in establishing his definition of freedom. Where the state is, freedom isn't. This does not mean, of course, that libertarians do not quarrel among themselves. I think a classic example of an operationally irreconcilable intellectual division within the libertarian camp is the one which presently divides Murray Rothbard from Robert Lefebvre. Rothbard follows John Locke and argues that the original claim of a man to the right of free exercise over property is limited by the amount of property which he can actually utilize through his own power of labor. Lefebvre argues that a man's original claim extends to as much property as he wants, and boundary disputes are to be settled by a system of voluntary arbitration. Each man sees the other's position either as inoperative or as irrational. Both men, however, would reject the conservatives' belief in the legitimacy of state power to settle such arguments by force if force is necessary. The conservative argues that the market is a mechanism which can provide a zone of human freedom. Obviously, some conservatives do favor tariffs or emergency price controls, but I do not wish to deal with these proposals, since essentially I think they're of a special interest nature and not really offered seriously as really conceivable intellectual constructs. So I am going to concentrate with what I regard as a kind of pure conservative theory. The conservative is never willing to give the market the claim of full autonomy in human affairs. Now, there's a reason for this. The conservative is perfectly willing to admit that the unhampered market mechanism is the most efficient method for the allocation of scarce economic resources. And that is why he refuses to give the market full autonomy. Because there are some things that the conservative does not wish to see done in an efficient manner. Following are obvious examples, or at least obvious examples to the conservative, of what I'm trying to get at. Production and distribution of heroin, especially into the hands of minors. The open, unchecked, and thoroughly voluntary exchange of sexual favors for money. The unrestricted sale of pornography, again, to minors. The sale of military secrets to the highest bidder. The right to build noisy factories in the midst of a residential district without any compensation to local owners who have refused to sell out their property. Conservative would also support the enforcement of quarantine procedures on members of the community who carry dangerous diseases that pose a threat to the very operation of the community, especially in highly congested urban areas. Without all of these openly coercive powers, The state could not protect the society from forces that would destroy the very fabric of society. The conservative believes that men will live under any system except anarchy, so that it is wiser in the long run to permit the state to exercise legitimate but limited power. If this is not done, men will choose to live ultimately under the rule of totalitarian power instead of holding to a totally anarchistic system. If society does not provide coercive institutional arrangements that preserve pockets of limited intolerance, it cannot defend itself from forces that would lead to the intolerance of totalitarian regimes. Hayek's now famous essay, Why I'm Not a Conservative, which first appeared in his Constitution of Liberty, makes a rather important observation. Quote, conservatism proper is a legitimate, probably necessary, and certainly widespread attitude of opposition to drastic change. It has, since the French Revolution, for a century and a half, played an important role in European politics. Until the rise of socialism, its opposite was liberalism. There is nothing corresponding to this conflict in the history of the United States, because what in Europe was called liberalism was here the common tradition on which American polity had been built. Thus, the defender of the American tradition was a liberal in the European sense. Therefore, what Hayek is saying, essentially, is that American constitutionalism, prior at least to the Civil War, was pluralistic, decentralist, and essentially liberal. J. Allen Smith, who was certainly no friend to either libertarianism or outright conservatism, writes in his study, The Growth and Decadence of American Constitutional Government, these words, the basic conception of the old political order was not the divine right of kings, but the sovereignty of God. The assumed divine right of the temporal ruler was not an essential part of this doctrine. Divine sovereignty, as envisaged in the Christian theory of the world, was simply a conception of God as the ultimate source of authority. Direct human intermediaries, such as Pope or King, were purely adventitious features of this belief. Thus, Smith concludes, quote, the ultimate sovereignty of God precluded the idea that any human sovereignty could be unlimited, unquote. Now, for America, this was doubly true, for its tradition after 1776 was Protestant, dissenting, and anti-monarchical. Law was founded in terms of a higher law and essentially a religious law. And anyone who wants to pursue this idea can take a look at Edwin Corwin's classic study, 1928, Higher Law Background of American Constitutionalism. The American constitutionalists operated within the framework of a culture which was predominantly Christian, although some of them, like John Adams and Jefferson, held moderately Unitarian or deist ideas in their private lives, but not in their public lives. All of the founders saw that civil society without law is inoperable, and all law, they realized, is ultimately founded on unneutral religious and moral presuppositions. The appeal made by libertarians to a neutral universal human reason conservatives regard as invalid. There can be no system of civil society that can satisfy the substantively or ethically rational demands of a socialist, for example, and the formally rational organization of the free market which the libertarian desires. The formal rationality of the market is a means to the ends established by the participants in the market. Substantively rational economic systems see economics as ethical goals in themselves, for example, the redistribution of wealth. Half a century ago, Max Weber argued that the two forms of rationalism are in perpetual tension, and little has taken place since that time to indicate that he was correct. So the conservative says rationalism as such does not solve basic human needs and basic societal problems. Jacob Viner, in his review of Hayek's Constitution of Liberty, brings out a crucial point. Quote, Hayek, incidentally, does not even include as a final value that freedom from coercion by other men for which this book is a massive plea. It is a means to value, as an instrumental value, not as value in itself, that Hayek presents his case for freedom. Men, however, often support as a means what is in fact commanding their full loyalty as an end. And I feel fairly confident that freedom from coercion by other individuals is for Hayek, as for me, a goddess in her own right, as well as a serving angel. Not so for the conservative. Other ethical goals are placed before the full autonomy of the individual. The glory of God, or the obedience of men to certain moral demands, the preservation of the community in the face of moral anarchy. The market is only one means among many to human fulfillment, and it is not, quote, a goddess in her own right. Thus, the conservative is forced to conclude that Murray Rothbard's proposal to establish a system of profit-seeking law courts and private police forces in place of political courts would reduce our legal system to the level of the Chinese warlord. As Mises himself once stated, such a plan would destroy 1,000 years of Western civilization. There is room for such voluntary courts of arbitration in a pluralistic society, and the conservative would certainly favor the establishments of such courts, but not as the sole source of judicial administration. Freedom is necessary for the full flowering of mankind's capabilities. I think any conservative, at least in the American tradition, would hold to that view. Society, however, cannot exist if the market makes available the moral acids that would render social cohesion absolutely impossible. Man is not autonomous, he's a creature under law. The sovereignty of autonomous acting man is as diabolical a goal as the sovereignty of the state. Neither man nor the state is divine. And both principles are antithetical to human freedom, for they would result either in the totalitarian state or the triumph of the warlords, with their private volunteer armies and their private volunteer courts. The market cannot function without some degree of social peace. It needs protection from its own warlike children, the profit-seeking courts, the profit-seeking prostitutes, and the profit-seeking dope peddlers. Let any human institution achieve full autonomy, and society will face either collapse or tyranny. And in conclusion, I would leave you with this idea, basically, that full sovereignty, like full perfection, belongs only to God and not to autonomous human beings or autonomous human institutions.
Thank you very much, Gary, for a very wide-ranging and thoughtful analysis of the libertarian-conservative split.